Shiva Siddhi Gaur, Radha Krishna, Gopagopa Sayam Kunda, Radha Kunda, Giriyo, Jai Vrindavan, Jai Mathuram, Jai Navadipam, Jai Jagadasami, Jai Rumai, Jai Srimati Lassi Devi, Joy Samaveda Bhakta, Vrindavan, Jai Gaura Prabhupada, Hari Hari Gaura. All glorious assembled devotees, all glorious assembled devotees, all glorious assembled devotees, all glorious to Sri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Okay, so reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, chapter 1, text 31. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Krishna, Sneha,
So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Different persons achieve different types of mukti. Sayuja, Salokya, Sarubya, Samitya, and Sarshi. According to their own intense desire, which is called Bhava. Thus it is described here that the gopis, by their lusty desires, which were based upon their intense love for Krishna, became the most beloved devotees of the Lord. Although the gopis of Vrindavan expressed their lusty desires in relationship with the paramour Parikya Ras, they actually had no lusty desires. This is significant of spiritual advancement. Their desires appeared lusty, but actually they were not the lusty desires in the material world. Chaitanya Charitamrita compares the desires of the spiritual and material world to gold and iron. Both gold and iron are metal, but there is a vast difference in their value. The lusty desires of the gopis for Krishna are compared to gold, and material lusty desires are compared to iron. Kamsa and other enemies of Krishna merged into the existence of Brahman. But why should Krishna's friends and devotees have the same position? Krishna's devotees attain the association of the Lord as his constant companions, either in Vrindavan or in the Vaikuntha planets. Similarly, although Narada Muni wanders in the three worlds, he has exalted devotion for Narayana, Aishwarya Mahan. The Vrishnis and Yadus and their father and mother of Krishna and Vrindavan all have familial relationships with Krishna. Krishna's foster father and mother in Vrindavan, however, are more exalted than Vasudeva and Devaki. So Gopya Kama Bhayat Kam So Vesas Choi Jadayo Nirpaha Asambandha Vishnaiha Sneha Yuyam Bhakcha Vayam Vibho. So Om Ganati Vananda Shah Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Miritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So here in the verse and also in the purport, it's made extremely clear that however you approach Krishna, that's the sort of destination you get. Of course, that's very clearly stated by Krishna in the fourth chapter of the Gita. Yehamam Prabhajante Tabsamadhyamyam. As they surrender, or as they approach me, is the exact translation. As they approach me, then I reciprocate accordingly. So, in other words, Krishna is equal to everyone. So, as far as these different types of liberation are concerned, they're very interesting. Like, generally, the impersonalists, or those who are enemies of God, or think of God in an inimical or envious way, get the type of liberation called sayuja. Sayuja means basically merging into the Brahmajyoti of the Lord. Because the Lord has an effulgence around him. Krishna, you see, there's pictures of Krishna, there's always an effulgence around Krishna. And that effulgence consists of individual spirit souls who are just like swimming around. Of course, they're not enjoying the swimming because they're not conscious. They're just swimming around and floating around in the Brahmajyoti. And of course, the Vedic literatures tell us, excuse me, the Bhagavatam tells us that it's quite frustrating existence, because after some time, generally they get bored. Like if I just say, just sit in one place and do nothing and don't think of anything, it's quite boring. So after a while they get bored, and Rudya Krishna Paramvadam Tata Patanti Yajo Yushmat Angraha. That's the Sanskrit verse. And that means that ultimately they fall down to the material world again, because they are not situated in their constitutional position as eternal servants of Krishna. So it's an unnatural situation for the living entity. Just like it would be unnatural for us to be in the water all the time. Right? I mean, if you ask us to keep swimming, I mean, maybe we like to go swimming, but we can swim for half an hour utmost. But if I say you stay in the water, of course you'll probably drown, but if I say you stay in the water for the rest of your life, and just sit there and do nothing, no surfing or anything, then it's going to be quite boring. Of course you'll die, but that's another subject matter. So the same thing with these souls who go to the Sayuja Mukhi, they ultimately come back down. And Prabhupada said that these impersonalists, generally they engage in charitable activities after they come down, they open up hospitals and different things like that. And you see that as quite a common factor for the Mayavadis. Like opening up hospitals, doing charitable works, which is not bad. I mean, ISKCON also has hospitals and does charitable work, but for the purpose of bringing people to Krishna consciousness, not for the purpose of making this material world a comfortable place. Like if you go to the Bhaktivedanta Hospital in Mumbai, the first thing you'll see when you walk in the door is a murti of Prabhupada. Has anyone been to the hospital? No, no one's ever been to the hospital. No, right. Anyway, the first thing you see is a murti of Prabhupada, and then they have Prabhupada chanting on the sound system everywhere. And generally, most of the devotees are doctors. And those who are not devotees are becoming devotees by the association with the devotee doctors. So it's actually a way to engage in charitable activities and at the same time make people Krishna conscious. It's not just mundane charity. Sometimes people criticize ISKCON for doing these charitable activities. There's a whole bunch of people who are like hyper-conservatives and say, ISKCON should not be doing charitable activities, shouldn't be distributing food to the poor or anything like that. But Prabhupada wanted us to do this, distribute prasadam. Of course, if you distribute bogus, then you're actually engaging people in sinful activities. Or if you just cure people's diseases without giving them a little Krishna consciousness, then you're just enabling them to go on committing sinful activities. So what's the use? But devotees can engage in charitable activities, medical activities, and things like that to gradually introduce people to Krishna consciousness. Like here in Fiji, we have, I guess, Food for Life. We distribute food, which Prabhupada said if they take prasadam, eventually they'll become devotees, as I told the story the other day. So, but the Mayavadis, when they fall down from the Brahma Jyoti, don't do that. They just engage in some mundane hospital work or mundane work like that. So that's Sayuja Mukti. Now, as far as the other muktis, which depend upon the devotee's desires, they're actually quite interesting. Of course, Salokya means that one lives on the same planet as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I mean, generally, in the Vaikuntha planets, everybody has Salokya mercy, Salokya liberation, because everybody lives on the same planet as the Lord, because every single planet in the spiritual world, Krishna lives on, in one of his various multifarious incarnations. So that Salokya is actually a common denominator for all devotees who go back to Godhead. Of course, you may say Narada Muni, he doesn't have Salokya because he keeps wandering around. But at least in the spiritual world, it's a common denominator. Then the next one is Sarupya, which is quite an interesting type of liberation. Generally, that's a Vaikuntha liberation, where one gets a very similar form to that of Narayan or Lakshmi. That's mentioned in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. You have this devotee, Gopa Kumar, who is basically going through various planets and stages in the material world to try to see what his eternal relationship is with the Lord. And ultimately, of course, he comes to the Goloka Vrindavan and realizes he's a coward boy. And that's where he started anyway. He was a coward boy to begin with. So, at one point, he reaches the Vaikuntha planets. He comes on a airplane, Vaikuntha airplane, which doesn't get lost in the Pacific Ocean. Maybe that's what happened in Malaysian Airlines. Maybe they went back to Godhead. People speculate. Some people say that they were hijacked by the Americans and they landed on this air base in the Indian Ocean called the Diego Garcia. Anyway, craziness. So Gopa Kumar went back in this Vaikuntha airplane and they leave him off at the gateway to a Vaikuntha planet. And they say, wait here, you know, the drivers of the chariot or the plane, say, wait here, we got to get the Lord's permission for you to come in. So as he's waiting, he sees all these different four-armed Vishnu forms come on their airplanes too. So the first one he sees, he offers obeisances. He says, oh, Lord Vishnu, please accept my humble obeisances. All glories, not all glories, but, you know, please accept my humble obeisances. And this person is a devotee because he has a Vaikuntha form, a form like Lord Narayan. And this devotee says, you know, what are you talking about? He puts his hands on his ears, basically. You know, I'm just a servant. So Gopa Kumar goes through this many times. He also sees a bunch of monkeys and bears around, too, but we'll discuss that in a second. So, anyway, so after a while he gets permission to go in, so he goes in through these various gates. I think there's like seven gates. Like even in the Christian theology, they talk about the seventh heaven, isn't it? So it's very interesting. So we talk about these seven gates. And in each and every gate, there is gatekeepers, like Jai and Vijay. And each and every gate, there's the head of the army there that protects the gate. And Gopakumara starts offering obeisances to each head of the army, saying, you must be Narayan. And the same thing happens. So eventually he goes in, and he sees the actual Narayan, and he's able to understand who the actual Narayan is, because it's explained to him there's certain features that Narayan or Vishnu has that no other manifestation of a devotee who takes a Narayan form has. And that's the Kastubamani and the Bhrigupada. Kastubamani is like this jewel, and Bhrigupada is the mark of Bhrigumuni, who kicked the chest of Lord Narayan. So anyway, so he's amazed to see all these different Vishnu forms. So that's the Sarupya Mukti. But then the question is raised in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, what are all these monkeys and bears doing there too? You know, like when they were in the spiritual world. Well, the answer is that in order to please the Lord, sometimes these devotees who normally have like Kunta forms, you know, the four-handed form like Lakshmi and Narayan, sometimes they assume the form that they served the Lord in before they came to the spiritual world. In other words, let's say that they were associates of Lord Ram, and you have the bears and the monkeys, and also you have other animals too. You have even a spider. You know the story of the spider? The spider that Hanuman almost squashed. The Lord Ram said he was doing as much service as Hanuman was. So anyway, so the question is raised, why all these living entities are there in these different forms? Why not just the Vaikuntha forms? Because sometimes they assume these forms to give pleasure to the Lord, and this is their part of their bhava or emotion. Rust with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the previous forms that they had in serving the Lord in the material world, which is quite interesting. Of course, that doesn't mean when we go back to the spiritual world that sometimes Sumukha will assume his previous form. No, I guarantee it won't happen. It's not that you'll be back with Krishna and somehow or other you look like a person from Fiji with glasses on and everything like that. Now, these forms are specific to the Lord's Nitya Lila in the material world. Anyway, so there's the forms like that. And in Krishna Loka, in one sense you can say people have Sarupya because they have a form of eternally bliss and knowledge, but in another sense not really, because their forms in Krishna Loka are all different. There's actually much more variety in Krishna Loka. I mean, the coward boys all look different, there's different colors. I mean, sometimes you see in these pictures, there's coward boys that are green, coward boys that are blue. It's really like, say, they say a rainbow festival, multiculturalism. It's not that there's any racism there. You're blue, you can't associate with Krishna. Like, you know, everybody, all these different colors, it's really interesting. It's like Prabhupada said about ISKCON, it's the United Nations of the spiritual world. So the spiritual world is the real United Nations, United Races and everything like that, because you have people of all different. Of course, everyone is beautiful there. No ugly people allowed. So anyway, so that's the type of rupas or forms that people have in the spiritual world. So that's the type of liberation, sarupya. Samipya, basically everybody has that in the spiritual world. Samipya means to be associated with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's a very common type of liberation. And the last type of liberation is sarshti, which means that one has the same opulence as the Lord. That's generally the Vaikuntha type of liberation. Not so much in Goloka Vrindavan, because in Goloka Vrindavan, people are not like walking around with forearms and things like that. Of course, sometimes Krishna manifests forearms just to fool the gopis. There's that story. of Chaturbhuj. Chaturbhuj means four arms. So one time Krishna was trying to hide from the gopis, and he took the form of Lord Narayan. And the gopis, they were looking for Krishna, and of course they were pious enough to offer obeisances to Lord Narayan. They said, "My dear Lord Narayan, Om Namo Narayan, please accept my humble obeisances, but can you tell me where Krishna went?" That's nice, isn't it? Like, you see God, you know, because generally, the gopis did not think that Krishna was God. There's no way, because you can't really have an intimate relationship with someone if you think he is God. It just doesn't work. If you think he's God, you ask him for something. That's what you do with God. You know, God comes in, you say, "Well, can I have something? You know, here's my list." Right? That's awe and reverence. And that's also mentioned here, Aishvarya Man. That means Narada's devotion for Narayan. It's in the mood of awe and reverence. Of course, Narada Muni sometimes adapts that to Vrindavan. I'll discuss that in a second. So anyway, so the gopis, they were looking for Krishna, and they said to Narayan, "Please tell us where Krishna is." And Narayan said, "I don't know. He's God, he should know." And anyway, so Krishna was hiding from the gopis. And then who comes out but Srimati Radharani, and she sees Lord Narayan, but Lord Narayan, she has so much devotion for Krishna that the extra two arms just disappear on Lord Narayan. And she sees Krishna. That's interesting, isn't it? Just like a Jayadeva Goswami's prayers, Keshavadrita, Narahari Rupa, Keshavadrita, Shukara Rupa, Keshavadrita, Rama Sharira, Keshavadrita, Haladara Rupa, discussing the various incarnations of Krishna, he actually sees Krishna. In other words, when he sees Lord Nrsimhadev, he sees Krishna playing a flute. In a special mood. It's interesting. Keshavadrita, Narahari Rupa, Raha, etc. It's interesting how that mood is there, that he sees Krishna in that form. Just like Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he would go to see Lord Jagannath sometimes, he'd see Krishna playing the flute. Interesting, isn't it? And, of course, Lord Jagannath looks the way he does because he's Krishna experiencing separation from the gopis. There's a whole story about that. That Krishna one time heard a story of himself that was being told by Rohini to Krishna's wives. And when Krishna heard that, his eyes opened wide and looked like Lord Jagannath. And Subhadra heard it, and Baladeva heard it, and they both, all three of them, you know, just like looked like Jagannath, Baladeva, and Subhadra. So the deities of Jagannath, Baladeva, and Subhadra are actually deities of Krishna, his brother, and Subhadra, experiencing separation from Vrindavan. They're Vipralamba deities. So when Lord Chaitanya would see Lord Jagannath, sometimes he'd see Krishna playing a flute. It's like that. So Radharani, getting back to that story, by her devotion, she forced Krishna to appear in his original form, playing a flute. That's a wonderful story. Anyway, so Krishna surrendered to Srimati Radharani. So anyway, these are the different types of liberation. Oh, I mentioned, I was going to talk about Narada Muni having Aishvarya Man. That means, Aishvarya means worshipping the Lord in Aishvarya or opulence. In on reverence. That's Narada Muni's general mood of devotion to Krishna. However, sometimes Narada Muni, he wants to understand Vrindavan. He becomes curious. And therefore he goes to Vrindavan and then he wants to see Krishna's Rasalila dance. So he sneaks up to where Krishna's Rasalila and some Rasamandal, Rasalila is taking place, and he tries to look, but who does he encounter but the guard of the Rasalila dance, who is Lord Shiva? But when Lord Shiva guards the Rasa dance, he doesn't look like he normally looks. He looks like a gopi. That's why he's called Gopishra Mahadev. That's Lord Shiva's a gopi. It's interesting, isn't it? And there's actually deities of Lord Shiva in Braj, like Lord Shiva with a sari on. Very beautiful gopi. And so he's guarding the Rasamas. And he says to Narada Muni, he says, you're not really qualified to come to see this Rasa dance because we only allow ladies to come. You have to be a woman to see the Rasa dance. I mean, you can't be some man and walk in, you know, with your binoculars watching Krishna dance with the gopis. I mean, it's actually very similar to the story in the Bhagavatam where Lord Shiva and Parvati were engaged in loving exchanges, and he was preaching Lord Shiva. And the sages came, and the sages got very embarrassed and left the area. And then Lord Shiva said to please Parvati that anyone who comes to this forest will actually turn into a woman. So there was a king, you know, Sudumna. He came into the forest with all of his soldiers and horses. The horses were all male horses, which are called, what's the name of male horses again? Stallions. So he came in with all the male horses, and all of a sudden, he and all of his horses turned into ladies, horse ladies, you know. Mares, it's called mares. So all of it, can you imagine how embarrassing that was? For the, you know, he was a king, you know, Kshatriya, proud, and everything like that. And so he goes into this forest, and all of a sudden, oh, hello. And he looks at his prime minister, and the prime minister, I mean, wouldn't that be embarrassing in Fiji? You know, your government officials go into the village somewhere, and somehow or other, they all turn into ladies. Then you'd have your first lady prime minister here in Fiji. So, anyways, so that happened to this king. And, of course, then later on he got the benediction by the mercy of Lord Shiva that he could be a woman 1 month and a man the next month. His citizens didn't appreciate it that much. You know, that the king was actually doing a sex change every month. I mean, what can I say? It's Bhagavatam. It's not that I'm making this story up, isn't it? It's in the Bhagavatam. And then you know, he had, and the king, when he was a woman, got pregnant and had children. King married Soma, anyway. I mean, it's a whole story about that, the Bhagavatam. So anyway, get back to the Krishna Leela story, is that Narada Muni was told he couldn't enter the Rasa dance. So therefore, you have to take the form of a woman. And Narada Muni was informed that in order to take the form of a woman, you had to bathe in the Kushama Sarovara. And so he went into the Kushama Sarovara, and he came out as Narada, a female Narada Muni. And when he came out as Narada, he went into the Rasa dance, but Krishna noticed him immediately. Even though he was a woman, you know, a very beautiful woman. And Krishna said, Narada Muni, what are you doing here? Because, you know, that's not his Rasa. Usually, you know, even though he wanted to see what's happening, I guess it's all right, but it's generally his rasa is one of Aishwarya. He said, and Krishna said, I got some service for you. You know, when Narada Muni wanted to watch the rasa dance, then Krishna just gives him some service. A little frustrating, but anyway, so he said to Narada Muni, I want you to stay here and write the Narada Pancharatra and the Narada Bhakti Sutras. These are two books. These are actually tantric books. Tantra doesn't mean necessarily left-handed tantra. There's left-handed tantra and right-handed tantra. Tantra basically means that which connects you. Left-handed is like, you know, the tantrics that you usually think about, the shaktas and everything like that. But right-handed just means instructions. Like we have tantric books too that instruct us, like Nectar Devotion, instruct us about how to do deity worship, you know, what the offenses on deity worship. These are all practical instructions. So he was told, and so the Narada Pancharatrika literatures are actually literatures how to worship the deities. So Narada Muni was told, you stay here, get your masculine form again,
and stay at actually this place called Narada Kunz, which is right near Govardhan. And you stay there and you write these books. And so Narada Muni said, yes, sir. Because he has that mood. He didn't say, I just want to stay and watch the Rasa dance. He's a servant. And so he went to Narayan, and of course he had an objection too. He said, Krishna, how can I do this? Because I've been cursed by Daksha not to be able to remain in any place. So I can't even stay here in Vrindavan. And so Krishna said to him that you can stay in Vrindavan because Vrindavan's not the material world. Curses don't apply in Vrindavan. Also, curses don't apply in the temple. If you get cursed by someone, just come to the temple. You know, sometimes devotees come to me and they say, I've been cursed by some witch doctor here in Fiji. You hear this all the time. I mean, one time Vishwanath and I went out to someone and drove the ghost away. You remember that? Wasn't that in Missouri or something like that? We did that many years ago, before most of you were born. We did that. And the ghost actually started speaking, don't chant. No. Yeah. And we kept chanting, then the ghost just flew by us, went out. And the person who was bewitched just collapsed on the ground. You remember that, right? Was there no. It was interesting. So anyway, but wherever the holy names are being chanted, it's a holy place. And ghosts and inauspicious creatures can't exist. So if you think you're being haunted by a ghost in the temple, you're wrong. You're being haunted by your material desires. Don't blame the poor ghosts. They're innocent. Isn't it? Because they can't affect you here. They're just not can't. If you have a place where the Hare Krishna mantra has been chanted, seriously, Prabhupada says that in the Krishna book. So curses, ghosts, goblins, whatever, don't have any effect within a spiritual abode, especially Vrindavan, especially near Govardhan. So Narada Muni remained there, and it was in that same place that he gave shelter to Kayadu, the mother of Pallad Maharaj, when Kayadu was taken into his ashram. That's the ashram where Kayadu got instruction, Pallad Maharaj within the womb got instruction, and became Krishna conscious. So these are some of the pastimes that occur, the different forms that devotees get in the spiritual world. So the point is, however you approach Krishna in an intense way, you get the results of that particular mood in which you approach Krishna. If you hate Krishna, you get to merge into the Brahma Jyoti, which is described as like hell for the devotees. There's an exception in the case of Putana. I understand that exception. Because it was a mixed thing. She didn't only hate Krishna, but she wanted Krishna to be her son. That was from the previous life. I described that story the other day. That she was the sister of Bali Maharaj. She actually prayed that Krishna. So it's interesting that even if you hate Krishna, but if you have a little bit of desire for something else, you don't go to the Brahma Jyoti, but you actually get purified and you go to the spiritual world. So if you have to, the moral of the story is, if you have to hate Krishna, mix it with something else. Mix it with a desire to be Krishna's mother, lover, friend, or something like that. And then you won't have to go to the Brahma Jyoti. So any questions or comments about any of these points? Questions, comments, arguments, problems, issues? Complaints.
Okay.
Yeah.
You mentioned one thing is the material desire within the devotee. Prabhupada mentioned makes you impure, that he can enter the spiritual world.
That's right.
So how does someone know when he's pure that he can enter the spiritual world?
That's an interesting question. Well, what happens is if you approach Krishna, you know, even if you have some impurity, it's like approaching the sun. Like we say, you know, Cheto Dharpanam Arjam, Bhava Mahad, Bhavni Nirvapanam. That cleanses the heart. You know, chanting the holy names cleanses the heart. So, if you approach Krishna for whatever reason, because he's so pure, that you get purified. Like Krishna says, four types of people approach me in the Bhagavad Gita. People want wealth, people are inquisitive, people want knowledge, or people are in distress. So, obviously, all of us are approaching Krishna for some impure motive. I don't think there's anyone here who joined the Krishna conscious movement because they were a pure devotee. Maybe there is. Forgive me if I'm committing an offense. But every one of us came for, we wanted, you know, wealth, we wanted whatever. Or we just wanted some rotis for breakfast. Isn't that? I joined the movement because I wanted rotis. Free rotis, free lunch. But anyway, so whatever. I mean, it's, or we just wanted knowledge. I mean, like, for example, one of the reasons I joined the Krishna conscious movement was I wanted to find out what life was all about. Where I came from, where I'm going, who God is. And that's no, it's not a pure desire. Although it's, you know, it's nice to have that desire. But it wasn't a pure desire because it was, I wanted to find out something to satisfy my curiosity. That's not pure. But by approaching Krishna, hopefully we get purified. Because then to find out about something to satisfy my desire, I have to chant Hare Krishna. Like Dhruva Maharaj, he had the desire to have a kingdom greater than that of his great-grandfather, and that was Lord Brahma. So in order to accomplish that, he had to chant. Right? So, you know, by chanting, he became purified, and when he saw Lord Vishnu, he said, I was looking for some pieces of broken glass, and I found a valuable gem. So, we should be honest. We're not quite pure right now. I mean, generally, when we first join the movement, we think we're pure. But after you make some progress, you realize how impure you are. When I first joined the movement, you know, I thought I was a pure devotee. And I turned to all the other brahmacharis, because in those days we used to have brahmacharis. I turned to all the brahmacharis and said, I must be a coward boy. I've just realized that. That was one day in the movement. I realized what my siddhadeha was. Pretty good, isn't it? One day in the Hare Krishna movement. And the other brahmacharya said, yes, we're all coward boys too. Why do we say that? Basically because we were all friends and, you know, and we just projected our material understanding upon the spiritual realm, which is a type of sahaja. I mean, it wasn't a bad thing. I'm not saying that we were a bunch of sahajas walking around. But, you know, it's taking things a little cheaply. So in order to realize your eternal spiritual form, you have to be very advanced in devotional service. At least the beginning of realization of that form comes at the stage of nishtha. Nishtha means one is steady in devotional service. Not just steady in the temple, but steady 24 hours a day. It's the two types of nishtha. One type is steadiness in the sadhana, another type is steadiness the rest of the day. In other words, vajra vegam, manasa grodha vegam, jiva vegam, uddha upasthra vegam. So, if you've reached that stage, then you begin to have a glimpse of who you are in the spiritual world. And then you approach your spiritual master. I'm not telling you, I don't want people to approach me today. But anyway, you approach, he said, Maharaj, you said this. I feel that I'm a gopi. Sumukhi is my name in the spiritual world. No, Dhurumukhi. So anyway, I'm just telling you what's there in the future for you. This is described by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in the Jiva Dharma. Then you approach your guru, if you're studying and say, Guru Dave, you know, I'm having these feelings, this and that. What do you think? And the guru may say, you're a rascal, because you're not qualified. Or he may say, let's talk about it. And then he says, well, then you can meditate. You get to the stage of Raghunuga Bhakti. And then you meditate upon service of a particular eternal associate of Krishna in the spiritual world. So you may say, well, you're supposed to serve Madhumanga in the spiritual world. So you meditate on that, and you do your internal manaseva, your internal seva. And then, but you're still not pure, completely pure at that point. But you're pure enough to begin to cultivate that internal life. And then ultimately, you become completely purified. But it has to be guided by the guru, or else it becomes a sahaja type of thing. But really, that's what we're aiming at, to have an internal life where we can associate with Krishna. I mean, just like I was reading yesterday the story of the Nectar of Devotion about this Brahmin who was very poor, and he couldn't afford to have a temple or worship the deities. So what he did is he got all the paraphernalia in his mind. He would sit and meditate. And he got gold pots for the deities and clothes for the deities. He would dress the deities very often. This went on for several years, doing this internal seva, manaseva. And then eventually, one day, he was cooking sweet rice for the deity. And when he was cooking sweet rice, he was thinking, now it's time to offer. But he thought, if the sweet rice is hot, it's not so nice to offer it to the deities. So let me touch it just to see what the temperature is. This is all meditation. So in the meditation, he touches the sweet rice, and it's hot, and he burns his finger in the meditation. Then he comes back to external consciousness, and he looks at his finger, and it's burnt. Then you know you're doing real manaseva when that happens to you. I mean, sometimes devotees even come back with garlands from the spiritual world. Pretty good, isn't it? So anyway, so he looks at his finger, and his finger is burnt. And he doesn't know what's happening. At the same time, the Lord in the spiritual world is laughing at the whole thing. And Krishna's consorts, the Lakshmis, are saying, what are you laughing about? Krishna doesn't even tell him. And then Krishna calls and sends his Vaikuntha airplane to take this Brahmin back to the spiritual world. The Brahmin comes back to the spiritual world, comes before Krishna, and then Krishna explains everything and they all have a good laugh. It's nice, isn't it? So ultimately we're meant to do this internal seva. I mean, even while you're sleeping, it's not when a pure devotee rests, he's not sleeping, he's resting. And he's doing internal seva while he's resting. I mean, I don't think many of us are doing that, right? Well, we're resting, we're dreaming, God knows what we're dreaming. You know? But a pure devotee is doing internal seva. So this is something, this is like a coming attraction. If you perform your devotional service nicely, with great devotion, intensity, you'll come to that stage. And then you'll be so happy, no matter what is happening externally, then internally you'll be just like enjoying like crazy with Krishna, or giving Krishna enjoyment. That's nice. And that's the stage I want to come to. Of course, the methodology in Kali Yuga for coming to that stage is not simply to sit and try to develop that stage, but to engage in Krishna Sankirtan, to preach Krishna consciousness. That's the methodology. In previous ages, it was just you just sit like this and say, oh Krishna, like that. But in this age, you go out, just like yesterday, I was very inspired to meet two Mormon boys, and they go door to door every day. I was thinking, are there any devotees that are going door to door? And they're sent, you know, from different countries. These persons, they came from, one was from New Zealand, one was from America. And they lived downstairs in the house of one of my disciples in Mysore. And they go out every day, door to door, knocking on doors. Just like Lord Chaitanya sent Haridas Thakur and Lord Nityananda, you know, please chant the holy names. So they're going out and just cultivating people dressed very nicely, tie and jacket. And they're having a great response. Like you see, the Mormon organization is quite big. Seventh-day Adventists. Not Seventh-day Adventists. The Mormons, Latter-day Saints. Latter-day Saints, that's what it's called. Latter-day Saints. They're quite big here. And that's how they preach. So why aren't we doing this? I mean, we're going to speak about this later. I mean, we should organize these things. I mean, what we've done in America, some of the temples I'm in charge of, we have one Saturday every month, we get the whole congregation to go out door to door. Pretty cool, isn't it? With books. The whole congregation, not just the little devotees in the temple, big devotees in the temple. But the whole congregation, it's like you have a festival. And everybody, you know, one weekend you could do Harinam. You have a festival. Everybody goes out door to door in pairs. And they knock on people's doors and they talk to them about Krishna consciousness. And our book distribution has increased like 500% in 1 year by doing that. Just once a month we do that. It's amazing, isn't it? It's just, and the devotees, afterwards they all come back and they do prasadam together in the evening. And it's like a festival. So we should do things like that. You know, I'm inspired by seeing how other people are preaching other, you know, religious ideas. So we should learn. We shouldn't just simply sit compact in the temple and ring bells. That's, if we just sit in the temple, then we're just neophytes. Okay, on that happy note, I don't know if it's a happy note, but on that note, we'll offer our obeisances to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.